Good morning, afternoon, or evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you look closely, you can see my nipples through this shirt. If you would desire some of my man milk, all you need to do is ask. This is Stevie. I'm Justin. This is our good friend Isaiah.
And I'm really afraid of what I just got into.
Yeah, he was walking by. We were chatting a little bit. We were like, hey, man, want to be on our podcast?
And I was like, and sure.
Yeah. Like an idiot. He agreed. So here we
like
are.
A lamb to slaughter.
Here we are. Man milk present to talk about bands. Are they allowed to change? If so, how much? Are you obligated to still like them, even if they're different? Are they still good if they're different? What the F are we talking about?
Are you allowed to like them if you didn't like them at first?
Mm.
Can you like jump on the bandwagon?
That's another great point.
That's a good question.
Are you, like, if you didn't like their first two albums that everybody else really liked, are you allowed to like their third album that nobody liked? Where do we even begin?
Wow.
Where do we even start? I actually don't know. Do we have a can that we want to just crack open here?
I'm pretty sure you came with a can.
Well, I just showed you all the can.
Okay.
Do I need to also open it?
I don't know. Do you have the tools to do such?
No.
Okay, that sound that you heard, if you're not watching this on YouTube, was his can opening.
Yeah. You just listened to Justin's can. It opened a little bit. So we're going to take a peek inside. When I first brought this topic up, I was using Linkin Park as a reference because they changed a whole lot. And it seems to have been a polarizing change. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, the new album's different. That's cool. It was like, what the heck, you guys? I thought you were a good band, but actually you're terrible. Was kind of the reaction that happened.
Wow.
So, as you may know or may not know, depending on your degree of enslavement to Linkin Park, their first two albums were pretty, you know, they were pretty, all the songs were pretty similar. You know, you got that rap rock thing going on with a couple ballads in there. Yeah.
DJ, turntables in the mix.
Yeah, you got some turntables in there. It's a six-piece band. If you guys don't know who Linkin Park is.
It's a park, like, kind of on the South Hill.
Yeah, so if you go there, you'll see it.
Yeah.
And then there it is.
If you don't know what the South Hill is, you're not from Spokane.
Yeah, if you're from Spokane, then you know. Yeah. That's where all the rich people live.
There is a speed trap there. And the reason, slow down to 20.
Yeah, you got to slow down to 20. The reason it's a hill, this is a really interesting fact. There wasn't a hill there originally. They actually built a mound so that all the rich people could look down on everyone. So
that's a lie. But.
Yeah, I literally just made that up.
That's a lie. Because it takes about 20 blocks to get to rich people on the South Hill.
Mm. That's
at
true.
First,
that's
it's,
true.
I think poor people trying to get out of the city.
Yeah, yeah. But you'll notice though, like as you go, like the grass literally gets greener as you go up South Hill. The grass gets greener. The houses look nicer. You're like, I can literally see crime dissolve as I drive.
Right. And the streets disappear. Like they're going, and then all of a sudden it turns into something else.
Yeah.
So they're trying to confuse people out of there.
Yeah.
It's more like you can tell like how much money somebody has by like how much money they just have to like pay someone else to take care of their yard for them.
Oh, God. I need to be rich so bad for that reason.
Yeah. You see some poor guy named Stefano like with some kind of uniform.
I'll pay him good.
Like mowing someone's yard.
I'm so horrible at taking care of my grass.
Anyways, I derailed us. Linkin Park.
Yeah.
Was that you?
Yeah, that was me.
if you had listened to our podcast, you would know we do that plenty fine on our own.
Yeah.
No reason not to go for it.
The only thing that happened this time was we came back to Linkin Park really quickly.
Because guy, he knows what's up. Linkin Park is a band that exists, and they did the rap rock thing. I felt like the second album, Meteora, was a better execution of the concept, but, you know, pretty similar. And then their third album was like a pop rock thing, and everybody was confused. They conflicted deep inside because all of a sudden it was like, oh, no, I'm being betrayed. They used to be cool. Now they're lame. They're talking about their emotions.
We don't even know who you are.
Yeah.
What do you mean? They were talking about their emotions.
Well, I mean, they were the whole time.
Yeah,
I'm
just saying. He came out talking about, you know.
Well, it's like it became in
it's
people's eyes.
More melodramatic.
Yes, yes, exactly.
About their emotions.
In people's eyes, it was like, no. No, they're soft, you know.
Yeah,
right.
More about like the first two albums, and I don't really know Linkin Park that well.
Yeah,
but
they know you.
Oh no! I think their first two albums are so much like more like in your face, edgy, angry, like a lot of anger in their emotion, and the third album I think kind of went more introspective and a little bit more. Adult with their emotion.
As if showing more like a wider range of emotion is somehow worse.
Yeah.
But anyway, so people's reaction was pretty negative. And then by the time you got to their fourth album, which was A Thousand Suns, a lot of people that I knew that had listened to them pretty much dropped off the bandwagon.
Wow.
And based on YouTube comments, I would say that's a recurring theme among Linkin Park fans. They were like, I'm done with this crap. This is stupid. But Thousand Suns is one of my favorite albums of theirs due to the weirdness factor. Yeah. I love the weirdness factor.
Mm.
They did something a little bit different, a little bit weirder, a little bit cooler maybe. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Think about it.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I liked it better than anything that they had done previous, just on the little bit that I heard. And I really liked their first album. I was a fan of Linkin Park. I wasn't diehard. Like, I had my bands, but I had the album.
Yeah,
and
I did listen
to it.
Yeah. I don't listen to the first two albums anymore, though.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only albums of theirs that I listen to now are Thousand Suns and Hunting Party.
To go into that a little bit, because this is kind of based on our topic, and I was sharing with you guys earlier.
Thanks for sharing.
Part of the reason why I quit listening to Linkin Park, and this is for me personally, was because of Chester's vocal. He's got a very specific range that doesn't, he doesn't drop below or raise up, you know, it stays in that same pocket. And the style, it just didn't change enough for me that it feels like, even when I'm familiar, when I was familiar with the first album, and I was somewhat familiar with the second album, you play a song and you're like, oh, which one is this? Mm-hmm. Right? And it takes you about 30 seconds before you're like, oh, it's this song, because it sounds so much like the other ones, you know?
Yeah.
And
that's true of their song structure as well, just to put a little.
Yeah. And little so for me as a fan, you know, I really enjoy people exploring, you know, different sounds and different stuff. But, I mean, there are times when a band that I like or an artist that I like is exploring and they go away from what I did like originally.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I wish they would not have done that. But for the sake of them staying in the pocket and staying the same, I'd probably err on that side.
Yeah.
You know,
word.
Than staying the same.
Word up.
So that's a little bit of my two cents up till this point.
Isaiah, thoughts? Criticisms, rebuttals.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know that much about like Linkin Park's catalog enough to, I think, make an educated opinion on their sound. But I would agree with Stevie on saying like I don't so much mind that when people try new things.
Yeah.
I do mind when they try something new and it didn't work, and then they try it again. You know, where like you're like, okay. That's fine. That was okay. And so, like, I was sharing with you guys earlier about the Killers. I feel like their first album was really, really good, Hot Fuzz. And then the second one, Sam's Town, had some really good tracks and then some stuff that I wasn't really crazy about. And it felt like they took what I wasn't really crazy about and then they were like, this is our new sound. And then they ran with that the next album.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I think what sucks about that is it seems like there's a lack of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Like, why are you trying to abuse my microphone? there's a lack of self-awareness. Like, it's like they don't listen to their own music. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the vibe I get when people do that.
Right.
It's just, like, did you listen to your own album?
Yeah.
Did you really absorb? Because I think as humans, we have a natural inclination to tune out when things are not interesting to us.
Yeah.
And so if you're a diehard fan of a band and you want to like a new album and you go into it with just open arms, like some people are cynical and they're like, okay, impressed me, you know. But if you go into it with open arms and you're like, I'm ready to love this. Whatever it is, like I have no prior convictions on what this is supposed to be.
Expectations are out the window.
Just I'm ready to be entertained. And then you take it in and you're still like, well, that could be better. Like that was not really jiving with that. To me, that's not a good sign, especially if you're pretty, if you're a person who's pretty well versed in different genres. And I don't mean like that one guy that you know that's like, oh, I listen to everything. And then you're like, oh, Swedish death metal? And they're like, well, actually not that. And then you just kind of name different genres and they're like, well, you know, not that. And so, well, I basically listen to everything but country and rap. But then they don't listen to anything.
Or Swedish death metal or rock.
Exactly.
Or,
you just kind of tick stuff off the list.
Yeah.
So not that guy. But if you're pretty, if you're generally versed in different genres and you like exploring and stuff, and then you listen to an artist's new project and you're still kind of, well, that's, yeah, all right. Because there's certain fundamentals, I think, of music in general, that music has to flow, it has to go somewhere, it has to do something. And so, regardless of genre, that's true.
Yeah. And honesty, I feel like we talked about that before. Vulnerability and honesty in the way the music comes across, you know, vocally, lyrically, instrumentally. I know that's big for me. I want to feel like you mean it, you know.
Yeah.
So I was, I think a lot of it comes down to identity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we go through identity issues like as people. You know, and like, so you'll see a friend you know, and he's like, oh, yeah, I like that haircut, and they got this new look. And then, you know, 2 years down the road, you're like, what? What are you doing now? You look completely different, you know? And it's like, I'm trying to figure this out, who I am and how I want to express myself. And I think a lot of that, you know, transfers as musicians or artists as their sound changing and trying to find out, like, who are we and what do we, you know, want to be? Or the other piece is, oh, we want to be successful, so we'll change our sound to whoever will listen, which is unfortunate.
Or whatever, work with whatever producer's going to sell us the most albums, you know?
Right.
That's you said something that, I can't remember exact phrasing, but it was basically like the band writing the music for us to like it. And I was like, just thought, like, do we act, does the band care? Like, that's should they question. Actually care? Like if you're writing music and you love it, and like, and I mean, from like a corporate standpoint, you can write music and it can be like, you're, the whole point is just to sell, sell tracks and to sell tickets to shows or whatever. But as an artist, do you, are, is it, is it, should that be like the in-game goal? Like,
this is a great question.
Like Linkin Park, should they, should they care? Like with their album, like that was probably more tonally mature.
Yeah,
that probably ticked off their more emotionally
stunted.
Yeah,
shots were just fired.
Middle school fans.
Yeah, middle, because honestly, like the only time I listened to Linkin Park was when I was in middle school. And it fits with that, like, I'm mad at the world because I don't understand what's going on.
You wear a hood.
What's happening with my body? You know, that kind of stuff. And so, like, does it actually even make sense for Linkin Park to, like, keep writing music for that crowd?
Yeah.
Like if I was an artist, I wouldn't want to, like, keep writing music for that crowd. Like, I'm like, I'm a 35-year-old man. Like, why? Why would I want to write music for a middle school kid?
Right.
So, I don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think that as an artist, you should care about people's opinion.
Yeah.
Insofar as music is communication.
Yeah.
And so, if people listen to your album and they're saying they got this out of it, great. But if what they got out of it isn't close to what you were trying to communicate, I I don't think that that means that you need to like reevaluate your life or anything, but I think it's that, that kind of feedback, the more the feedback of response is important.
Right. Because you can be going like, for something and you're trying to dial in hitting the mark.
Exactly.
Then you need to, hear feedback and adjust.
So that, I would say you should care about feedback.
Right.
Not necessarily everybody's feedback, but you should try to glean information.
Right.
But you can't please everybody.
Right.
And so that element, I think you need to be careful about, because if you try to please everybody, you end up with, or at least as many people as possible, you end up with, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say the dreaded word, pop.
Yeah.
We talk about pop a lot.
Yeah.
We really do. Something that's kind of esoteric, easily approachable.
Yeah.
Not very different, because everybody's trying to hit that same vein.
Yeah, stay in that vein and, not do anything too risky or out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it, even, like, it brings back, like, Stevie had that question at the beginning where it was, like, are we allowed to, like... Like, if we didn't like the first two albums, are we allowed to like the third album or whatever?
Yeah.
So then is it like, who's to say it's a bad album when, like, sure, it wasn't maybe your taste or whatever, but it was this other person really enjoyed it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, what, how do you, I mean, yeah, how do you decide? Is it just, like, based on commercial success or is it based on, like, its actual, like, I don't know. For me, like, I like to look at music and bands and like their cultural and like their impact on their culture at that time that they're around. So like you look at bands like obviously like the Beatles are super easy just to like, oh yeah, they like influence everything. But then you have other bands like the Beach Boys and like how they influenced all of California and their culture.
It was like an invasion.
Yeah. It's crazy. Or even like Fleetwood Mac and like those different kind of bands that still have like this huge success. Like, are we going to still like hear Linkin Park being played years down the line? And I feel like those bands, especially the Beatles, like talk about like changing who you are as a band throughout your albums. Like,
Yeah, like, they definitely fit the bill for that.
And even their first couple albums being middle school albums.
Yeah, those were pop music.
At middle school and high school.
Yeah.
Girls.
Yeah.
Really.
Was Eleanor Rigby on Sgt. Pepper's?
I think that one's... No, wait. I think it is on Sgt. Pepper's.
Because I feel like that was the first... I don't know which album that is,
but
I feel like that was the first album
where
I really got like, this is like... on an emotional level, this is deeper than prior material. So that album for me was like the first one where
that's,
I was like, oh.
That's the one where they started to kind of get into like a lot of Eastern theology. And that,
Drugs.
Yeah. You know, I just really, what I love about the Beatles is the drugs that they did. That's my favorite part.
My favorite part too.
If you couldn't hear it.
Yeah, no, and then... another thing, I read this in an interview, I can't remember where I read it, but the Beatles actually credited a lot of their more, like, narrative songs, I'm spacing on the names of them now. They're like, I had them in my head, and then I said it, and then it was like, whoop, completely gone.
But we know they're out there, narrative songs by the Beatles.
Like Eleanor Rigby, like it's more of a story than it is like an actual song, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Those songs, they were talking to Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan told them, "You guys need to write stories. You need to write stories into your songs."
And when Bob Dylan tells you something, you gotta listen.
Yes. So, and I feel like probably kind of a culmination of all that, like, they really. Changed their sound, but then also, like, just, like, their lyrical content completely changed.
Yeah.
And so, like, bringing it back to Linkin Park, it's, like, all of that change was for the better, but I know, like, so, like, my dad, like, grew up in the 50s and 60s, and he was a Beatles fan, kind of, I mean, he's kind of young, but in that time period or whatever. But he said, like, he remembered when Sgt. Pepper's came out, and people were mad. Like,
yeah.
They hated it. They hated it. But it doesn't actually mean that Sgt. Pepper's, like, now we listen to it and we're like, wow, Sgt. Pepper's is a way better album than Twist and Shout.
Yeah,
and
that's what I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
And so I'm like, well, can we listen to Linkin Park and then, you know, like, in the end, it doesn't even matter. It's like, okay, yeah, that's real nihilistic.
Yeah.
But you have like this, like, I don't know, it's just that adolescent sound, you know? Yeah. And then you have like, could it be that years later, like, people look back and like, wow, these albums that were at the time kind of panned, you know?
Yeah.
That they're actually the more like
meaningful
and, yeah, and like introspective and
quality.
Well written, you know?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, not that you can say that completely in every case.
Right.
I think commercial success is an indicator of something, but not necessarily the right something. So, yeah, like, for instance, Madonna, you know, selling millions of records out here, and I'm not getting any kind of, like, deep philosophy or meaning from Madonna.
Yeah.
I would say those
sex sells, baby.
Yeah, it does. The word that comes to mind when I think of Madonna is grotesque.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, it's Cones. Just like, you know, I'm out here talking about my man milk, and Madonna's coming along.
Right. Which is also what came to my mind when you talked about man milk.
Yeah.
Was Madonna?
Cones.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just seems like a better, like, feeding mechanism? Strategy, maybe.
No. Oh.
Just, like, know, a funnel?
Yeah, exactly. There's no contact that way, so yeah, that would be nice.
Wow. Okay.
If you want some nourishment.
I hope you bring us back to Earth.
Oh, gosh. What were we even talking about?
You're talking about...
We're really good.
You were talking about Madonna.
Commercial success, yes, yeah, being an indication of quality.
I am really bad at that, getting back to where I need to be. But, yeah, Madonna does well commercially, but I wouldn't say that's an indicator of value, of longevity.
Right.
So I do think it is something to consider.
Wow.
Yeah.
But, you know, Linkin Park's I don't know this off the top of my head, but I would imagine that some of my favorite albums of theirs are not their best-selling, which is what I said earlier, Thousand Suns and Hunting Party. I bet you they're probably on the lower end of sales as opposed to the higher end.
Yeah.
But I think those are their best. They're most musically complex.
And they had a couple of more poppy albums in between. You were saying, right?
Yeah, Minutes to Midnight and One More Light, I would say, are their most mainstream.
So what the fans that were upset when they took a different direction, when they came out with the more poppy stuff, were they happy again or were they mad again?
I wasn't really on that bandwagon for the new album.
Right.
I think I've only listened to it once because, the whole, like... Chester committing suicide thing kind of ended it with a sour note for me. So I was like, I don't even want to go there. I didn't want to be one of those like morning tween girls that like listens to the album on repeat and it's like, Chester, why? You know?
Right.
So I kind of avoided the album, I think, because of that.
You don't want anybody to catch you doing that.
Yeah. Because I'm doing that. You just can't catch me doing it.
Self-preservation.
Yeah. So... I would be happy to return.
That middle school mindset of, I can't let them know that I wear dinosaur pajamas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which I do.
Right. Well, because when you get older and more mature, you want people to know. Or you just don't care if they do.
I'll leave the house with my dinosaur pajamas now.
Yeah.
But in middle school, you know, I was in denial.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'd be happy to return to that album. But I would say that I'm least familiar with that one.
Yeah. Well, I think like... Just going into this, I think it's kind of true about a lot of things that are great. You know, like I think that somebody who comes into mind is like Muhammad Ali, and I know I always reference like fighting stuff, but I think people knew that he was great in the middle of him being a heavyweight champ. Like they knew that he was great and what was happening was special, but I don't think people knew how special it was for a while. You know, after time going on and then looking back and watching him do some of the things he did and being like, oh my gosh, that guy was on another level when he was in his prime. you know, books that are written that you hear, you know, decades later getting hugely popular when they first come out and people are like, what is this? Mm-hmm. You know, which is crazy to think because how much energy goes into, like, for an artist, I need the immediate response of the fans toward what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, how much fuel is that feeding the people that are coming out with music, especially in, you know, mainstream avenues? And when you look at it like this, it's like, it's really not a strong indication at all of what you're doing being great or not great. I mean, maybe how much money you're going to make off of it. But yeah. So it's interesting.
No, I think the American dream kind of fuels kind of that whole money equals greatness. Money equals
success.
Success, and I'm doing something right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of ways to make money that are not very great, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
But,
yeah.
So I'm reading that Hybrid Theory.
That's it. Yeah.
Which is the first one.
First album, yeah.
Is one of the best-selling albums ever in the U.S.
Huh.
Really?
Wow.
I did not know that.
It's 11 million albums they sold. Worldwide, they sold 30 million.
Crazy.
So that's pretty obscene.
That is.
Pretty obscene.
I had no idea.
Of albums.
I knew it was big. It was a big album. When I was a teenager.
I'm trying to find some more concrete numbers for their other albums. I'm not finding any as of right now. Hybrid Theory came out in 2000.
Crazy.
I am so old.
Yeah, 17. I was 17.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I was 6 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Yeah. Rock was crazy, too. Like, the mainstream rock, you know, was pretty diverse at that time. I know that, like, Incubus was coming out. There was Head PE. I guess that wasn't super mainstream. Linkin Park, Mudvayne, Tool. Tool was big. Rob Zombie, Marilyn Manson, you know. I mean, and if you think about just all those different bands from those genres, they're very different sounding bands. Static X. Anyway.
Yeah, I remember. It was a weird time, man. It was a weird time.
Very. Personally.
So
weird.
There we go. I got some concrete numbers for you.
Give me some data.
So.
Get ready.
So it looks here. So Hybrid Theory was 11 million in the U.S., 30 million worldwide.
Sweet.
Meteora was 27 million worldwide, 7 million U.S.
Not quite as good, but
still.
Minutes to Midnight was 20 million worldwide and 4 million U.S.
I would have guessed that one did the best, but.
Mm-hmm. 1,000 Suns was 1 million U.S. They don't even have a worldwide number on that one. Living Things was 1 million U.S.
And was that still more poppy?
I would say it's a little more poppy than 1,000 Suns. It's not a concept album per se, but it definitely had a lot of that vibe. It had the feel that it was like a B-side album of stuff that didn't make it onto 1,000 Suns.
See, it's just an interesting journey.
Hunting Party has 1 million U.S.
So they did pretty, like, it dropped off after Hybrid Theory pretty significantly.
Well, the next two were, staying there. You know, I mean, close. 30 million, 27 million. That's 3 million, right, difference?
That's still really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And the minutes, was 20 million.
Yeah, so that takes a dip. And but again, I just wonder how many people, maybe not, but how many people were like, this sounds too much the same, and they drop off by the third album.
But or they could have just hold on a little bit longer, and they would have gotten some different stuff. I know.
Or the teenagers grew up, and they're like, I'm over this. I'm done whining about my life.
But you said that in a whiny voice, so I don't know what to believe.
Wow.
does it say One More Light, how that one did?
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm curious, because Chester,
I think,
very sadly passed away
after
that. I was going to say something a lot less sensitive, but I'm not that horrible of a person. So.
500,000 US.
Dang.
Yeah.
Wow. So.
Well, and also you have to look at like streaming. Who comes into play.
Oh, yeah, because as the albums are going on.
Yeah. And that's a good point. I mean, like we can look at, like I'll go on Spotify and we can look at how many plays these songs have.
Downloads. I think to have like a really good indicator, you'd also have to look at
YouTube views.
Well, other albums for successful bands in that same time period.
Yeah.
To really get a good feel for like what is a good year for album sales, you know?
Yeah.
Because Meteora sold almost 1 million in the first week. And, like, it doesn't matter who you are. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's really freaking good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I bumped those numbers up a little bit accidentally. I think it was more like 800.
Yeah, see, like, One More Light, the song, One More Light, has 120 million plays on Spotify.
Goodness gracious. Mm-hmm.
So.
What album's that off of?
That's the last one, One More Light.
Okay. So compare that to, like,
And then In the End has 555 million hits on Spotify.
So what was the other one? The other one had
120 million. But that you have to also look at two. Like In the End came out in 2000.
Yeah, and that's
and then
like
More and More Lights
2 years ago
was just 2 years has gotten 120 million.
Yeah, so that's an indication. I mean, that's a big one. Album sales are not any longer your main source of revenue.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, music streaming has so changed the game as far as revenue. I think it was Dave Grohl said, like, I don't freaking care. Like, if you download my albums illegally, just come to my shows and buy my merch.
Buy my whatever. Merch.
Yeah. Cause like, that's like for an artist, like on it, like, I mean, cause the record, like record deals and recording studios, like how they're structured, you're not going to make that much money off of your album sales anyways.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I don't freaking care. Like, you can, I think he said, like, you can send it to your friend over email. I don't care.
And invite him to my show.
Yeah, but come to my show. And like,
yeah, because if you, you know, if you're a really,
that's it. Yeah,
I would say a high profile act, like Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Like, you just want people to come to the shows.
Yeah.
And buy the merch.
And the more they hear your music, the more they are going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, the show itself. In that instance is a selling point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because I, you know, as we were starting in music, I remember early on having thoughts of like, you know, how much time and energy and money goes into practicing, you know, writing your music than getting studio time or the time if you're doing it, you know, as an independent artist in your own room, like recording, producing, and, you know, not many people know who you are. And then at the end of it, feeling like, man, I need to at least get $5. You know what I mean? If I make hard copy CDs, I need to at least get $10 because, you know, I don't even want to think about what that number is right now of hours of time and money.
Yeah.
But then again, like if you've got the long game in mind, the more people that actually are going to listen to your music are going to be fans, you know what I mean, that maybe follow you in the future. Yeah. So if you charge $10 and 5 people buy it, you know, is that as good as 200 people getting it for free that maybe will, you know, come to your show later in
time? Well, that's why, like, SoundCloud is such a huge thing now. And, like, why you've got, like, guys like Tekashi 6ix9ine that, like, was a nobody and then, like, put his music out on SoundCloud and then these other, like, hip-hop artists find it and they share it on their Twitter page and then...
Boom.
Boom. And he spent, like, $0 on... on like creating any sort of hard copy album or posting his songs on iTunes or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean the hubris of the music industry to think that it could not change.
Yeah.
And still be successful is mind-boggling.
Right.
Every other industry adapted to the internet except the music industry, it seems like. 'Cause what company created the first mega successful song distribution online? It was Apple. Apple did it first.
What was it? iTunes. I thought it was Napster.
Was Napster before iTunes? I thought it was around the same time. I guess I could be wrong.
I'm not sure.
I don't know much.
Stinking MP3 format killed us all. I just get a picture of Steve Jobs. 1,000 songs in the palm of your hand. Like, what just happened?
What a time. Mm-hmm. What a time to be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, either, yeah. It's just, it's so dumb to me that there's, it's like.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because with that point you just made. Oh, you're going somewhere?
No, I was about to start a rant, so you need to head me off.
I'm going
to
have another rant. So no, but based on what you said about this hip-hop artist, you know, see, it's unfortunate, too, because it's a lot easier for a hip-hop artist to do that, you know, because, like, people listening to you as a hip-hop artist, they're not necessarily going, oh, those are dope beats.
Yeah.
Those are, you know, if you're a hip-hop fan, you're like, what kind of lyricist is he? You know, how does he execute it?
Yeah.
And everything else could be garbage. Yeah. And be like, dude, we could make this guy, you know, successful.
Yeah.
Well, here we go again. Successful. We can make a lot of money with this guy.
Yeah.
You know?
But you can, like, as a band, you know what I mean? You can't do that.
Yeah. Well, kind of. I mean, you kind of can. I mean, so there's a guy, his name's Charles Bradley, and he's like a, so he was a homeless man. I think he was living in New York, and he, would sing in the subways and, like, just, you know, would sing, like, covers of songs or whatever. Mm. I think he had some stuff he had written. This guy, I think it was from Most Def Records, was just walking by and, like, heard him and was like, dang.
Yeah.
Like, this guy can sing.
Yeah.
And so they took him and they gave him a band and they, like, recorded an album. I should pull it up for you. It's really freaking good stuff. But, like, I mean, you hear his voice, and you're like, this guy has lived through some stuff.
Yeah.
It's like his experience comes through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super. Where should we even hold that?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably there.
It's very, like, Lionel Richie, like, old school.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Which I like. I like some of that trickling into current music. Yeah.
But you can imagine just be, like, you're in the, like, in the subway.
Oh, yeah.
And you just hear this voice, and you're like,
what? You, like, take your sunglasses off.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, my God. I'll catch the next one.
Yeah. This is crazy.
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude.
Okay, so he proved me wrong. It can't happen. But how many guys in the subway, you know, got that lucky?
Right.
Because you have to cross paths with a guy that has those connections and that has that.
Yeah.
And that living in New York City helps.
And that's the thing. Like, that's where SoundCloud, it's like, it creates that, like, exposure and those connections.
Because it's a subway.
Yeah, it is like the subway station of the internet.
Yeah.
You have, like, all these street performers basically trying to get people's attention.
Yeah.
And that's honestly why I think, like, some of the SoundCloud stuff, it's like some of the more, especially the hip hop on the sound, like, coming out of that kind of SoundCloud rapper vein.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, really in your face, aggressive, and it's really, like, it's not, I don't know, because, like, 90s rap is so violent, you know, and so, like, when they're talking about murdering people, you're like, yeah, no, they straight up, that's, he actually murdered somebody.
Right. And he said his name on the song, and it's a top 10 hit.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have, like, now you have rappers, like, who would ever believe, like, if Drake said, I killed somebody, you'd be like, no, you didn't. You killed, like, maybe a fly in your room.
And you're Canadian.
And then you cried about it.
Canadians don't kill people unless it's in a hockey game.
Yeah, the only...
And so I think that whole, like, it's so aggressive and it's so... And it's just to get attention. Basically, just to, like...
Yeah.
And that's why they're dyeing their hair, like, 7 different colors and, like, tattooing their face. And, like, it's for the, it's so that they get the attention.
Yeah. Well, and they think, I mean, you know, like we were talking about the week before last, you know, hip hop's birthed out of, you know, violence and a generation that was dealing, you know, L.A. streets and New York City streets. You know, so there's still that part of, like, oh, we got to be dealing drugs, taking advantage of women, you know, to be... it's sad that people are still following that form now, because I feel like there's been so many artists. I mean, hip hop's evolved so much.
At this point,
it's easy to look and know, like, you don't have to go that route to be a good hip hop artist.
Right. You know,
but they still, I don't know the percentage, but how much hip hop centers around those three subjects.
That guy I talked about, Tekashi 6ix9ine, he's in prison now for like racketeering and like exploiting young women and like just like weird, nasty stuff.
Yeah.
He doesn't come across as super intelligent either.
No.
I don't even know if I want to go there. Yeah. But Tekashi 6ix9ine and like
proud of
like
Justin.
Lil
These
Xan.
Last couple weeks, you've really honed it in.
Like Lil Xan, if anybody has a negative IQ, I think it's Lil Xan.
Come on.
Like he has like this eye tattoo of like ooze. Yeah. And I'm like, what kind of idiot does that? Wow. Like what the frick?
It's just
I don't understand.
He got synced with Pink Eye one time, and he was like, "This is the greatest experience. I just want to be, this could be commemorated on my face for the rest of my life.
This needs to be it. This needs to be my life." Yeah, I just, you know, like I listened to their lyrics, and I've seen a few interviews with them and stuff. What are we coming to as a society, man?
Yeah,
like this guy somehow. Like, am I supposed to believe that he created his music? Like that takes, I don't know, the word crafting I could believe due to the quality of it, but any kind of like sound production, like I just don't think he's smart enough. Like I don't think he I'm gonna be straight up, like he talks super slowly, like it's like he doesn't know how to process words, so he's like,
which is bad if you're an aspiring hip-hop artist.
I know, but it's like kind of like the cadence of his speech.
And
I feel like I'm probably like a 70-year-old man inside my heart, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
You young kids.
No, and I wouldn't say like that I appreciate their music at all. But it's just crazy to me that we live in a day and an age that like you could be absolutely no one and then all of a sudden like Kanye hears your song and then tweets it out, and then all of a sudden you're famous overnight.
Yeah.
That's insane to me. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like,
yeah, they say it like one guest appearance on Oprah will turn your book into a number one seller.
Yeah.
And just by, I mean, that's kind of a different avenue, but same. Yeah.
It's exposure.
Exposure, yeah.
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 And the power, you know, to be somebody who has that platform.
Right. But even, like, with TV, like, it was, like, you had to be watching Oprah sitting on your couch on TV at that time to see that episode. Whereas now it's, like, that tweet exists and is still being circulated.
Yeah.
To this day,
it could be just a sentence with a link.
Yeah, and now that it has so much broader of a reach than just like television, because television was so dependent on butts and couches, you know, and eyes on screens, whereas now everyone has a smartphone, so. You know, I don't have a Twitter, but like I think a huge portion of the universe has a Twitter account. Yeah. You know, the universe probably has a Twitter account.
Yeah.
There's probably somebody that's tweeting out that they're the universe, and it's probably a great Twitter. I probably would recommend it. I don't know.
Yeah, he probably just posts like different nature documentaries.
Yeah,
it's like this is accurate.
I know.
Like there's a Twitter for God, and he posts all about being God.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you follow him?
It's pretty. It's
I
pretty
I don't
lame.
Have a Twitter.
It's pretty lame account. I'm gonna say right now. Wow. But one last thing about Lil Xan. He does a song. I think it's called Betrayed, and it's about how Xanax will ruin your life. And I'm like, how long did it take you to figure that out? You know what I'm saying? Like, who knew?
You still have Xan. You still have half
of him. That's where the betrayal comes.
Right.
He's like, I named myself after you, and now you're ruining my life.
Yeah, who knew that drug addiction ruins lives? Who could have told him this? It pisses me off.
Yeah.
It's like we have to relearn stuff that's obvious.
Yeah.
Like, fire burns. What up, fam?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, and that's it's interesting because, you know, like we were talking about before, and I don't know what the percentage is now, but most people that represent the demographic of music listeners and people that go to shows are, I think this, you know, it's like 12 to late 20s, you know, and so, and that's always kind of recirculating, and, you know, we're figuring it out, right? Yeah. At 12 years old, like, nobody can tell me what, like, no, it's different for me.
Yeah.
Like, trust me, don't go down that road. No, you don't know nothing.
Like, you don't know me. You don't know my life. You don't know what I've been through.
Yeah. Right. And then you kind of hit your early 20s, and you're like, well, maybe they kind of know what they're talking about after you're late on a couple bills, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff happens. And so a part of it's the people.
Yeah, that's what's always interesting to me. I don't know if it's different for other, like, my parents were never, like, super into, like, music and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, stuff from their, like, generation. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to me, like, you have guys like Paul Simon that are still, like, writing music and still making music. And
yeah.
I don't know if you've listened to Paul Simon's new album, but it's actually really stinking good. I mean, the guy
I haven't.
Cranks out, like, million-dollar lyrics. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's...
Like, he's a million-dollar man.
Yeah, it's just insane.
He is a writer.
Yeah, he's just a writer. And I just think it's interesting, like, but, like, how many people, so, like, Kenzie, my wife, my father-in-law, Robert, is a huge Paul Simon fan, but I don't know if he's listened to the new Paul Simon album.
Right.
Like, what is it, like, getting old, I feel like people don't really, like...
Mm.
Keep listening to music.
Right.
And if they do, they listen to stuff that was from their generation. And I can kind of get that, like, because obviously there's just things, memories that it brings up and invokes or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, even, like, using, like, examples of, like, so Paul McCartney, he's still writing music, still writing really good music. And if you're, like, a Beatles fan and you listen to all their stuff, but now you don't listen to Paul McCartney stuff. Like, why is that? Like, what is the part of growing old that you stop listening to music?
That's a great question. I feel like that could be its own podcast. Yeah. But here we are. We're going to talk about it.
we can write it down, too. We can maybe chat on it for a little bit. But I don't know. I just had that thought of, like, just kind of thinking, like, all the old people that I know. Old people, I'm sorry. Older
like my
people.
Mom, my dad. They're so old.
I mean, they're in their 60s, so.
Shots fired.
but like, just like, why? Where's the disconnect? Is it like a disconnect from like your life just gets too busy? Or is it like.
Stevie's like, yes.
I know that's part of it for me.
Yeah.
Like, and I've noticed that, like, even, and I'm more intently listening now the last few years than I have, but there's,
Yeah, because I think, like, people in the music industry that are probably older, they still kind of keep their – because they have to because it's their job. It's what they do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you have, like, Paul Simon playing songs with bands. You guys know who Lake Street Dive is?
Mm.
No?
No.
They're just kind of more like whatever.
Yeah, anyways, I'm not cool enough to know.
But, like, just playing songs with, like, more modern bands and stuff, and Lake Street Dive has a very, like, old school kind of doo-wop feel or whatever.
Yeah.
But
It reminds me, like, at certain points in Miles Davis' career, like, he has hip-hop artists featured on some of his stuff.
Right. Yeah, and so, like, those people, they're still keeping their finger kind of on the pulse of the music industry, but I feel like as far as, like, I can't think of, in my mind, people that are older than, like, 50 plus or whatever that are really, like, I would say are, like, music junkies.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That I don't, like, I don't, you go to shows and, like, you never see old people there unless it's, like, the band member's family.
I really want to get into this, but I almost feel like we should just have him back and then do another part.
Right, that's fair. Because that's.
I mean, how late do we want to go? Because I think we've already had an hour.
What time is it?
It's 12.
Yeah. We got to wrap it up, but that would be great to go into. Because, I mean, like, one thing on my heart, and I'm not going to go into it too big, but one of the reasons why I listen to what's current is, yeah, one, it's my job, but I feel like that's kind of second. For me, I want to know where the generation coming up is at.
Yeah.
You know, and so I listen to stuff I don't even necessarily like,
yeah,
because I want to know where they're at.
Yeah.
You know, and it helps me understand yeah. them, you know. And I think as older generations, or no matter what generation you are, especially, not especially with anything, music is a very imparting type of a thing, too. You know what I mean? You got bands, you're growing old, you pass down, mm-hmm. you know,
from right. the loins.
From the loins of yeah, your soul.
Your know, loin soul.
Trying, okay,
when man I'm milk.
Yeah. I will bequeath my man milk and pass down to future generations the sustenance therein.
Okay.
The
sustenance. Hopefully you guys are still Lincoln tracking Park. After the man milk. But how important, you know, if you want to understand where the generation is at,
yeah.
you know, go to the shows, listen to the music,
yeah.
and speak the language,
yeah.
you know, so yeah, you can I mean, be a part of it.
Can you imagine, like, all these parents that, like, during the 60s and, like, the whole hippie movement, like, if they actually, like, sat down and listened to the music and, like, actually, like, figured out what, like,
yeah.
the thoughts and, like, questions that the generation was facing and having and
wow.
the moral dilemmas, like, yeah. there was so much insight that they could have gleaned from yeah. that music.
It's like, son, yeah. I'm going to Woodstock with you, and let's go on this journey to search out the meaning of life, you know?
Journey.
No, I'm not going to drop 10 hits of LSD, but oh, okay. I'll be here for you when you're crying. And
by journey,
your
I
pants.
Thought you meant, like...
Looking for your tent?
Journey. You know what
like
I'm
the Beatles' journey, yeah.
Right.
Like, let's go on a journey.
Let's go on a quest of the soul.
Quest.
But yeah, I think that's. I mean, that's a huge part of it for me.
Yeah, and I'd love to come back and talk about it some more. I think we should summarize what we feel about our whole discussion of bands trying new things.
Right.
Yeah, I, for one, love it when bands go out of their comfort zone.
Yeah,
and they. Try something.
Yeah.
However, when you listen to music, at the end of the day, it's a product.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a level of refinement that it's okay to expect.
Yeah.
From such a product.
Yeah.
So experimenting in musical styles outside yeah. of their norm, absolutely wonderful thing to do. Amazing.
Yeah.
10 out of 10, would recommend. But I think that you need to be self-aware enough to know, okay, this is going to work or it's not going to work. If it doesn't work, it doesn't mean you don't that you can't do it. It just means it needs refinement and
yeah,
like
yeah.
just kill it, you know.
And it would be awesome, you know, commitment on a fan base. Kind of like you were saying, like listen to the album, I'm just going to you know, no expectations, you know. There's a commitment like if you really buy in, you know, even beyond like say the sound, maybe I'm bought into this artist, like I support who they are,
yeah.
What they're doing, then, I mean, most artists that I know, even when they started making music, they're not thinking about those things, right? They are trying something new. You know, like, we're going to do this because I have some things that I want to get out, and I love music, and let's see what happens. And then they end up losing some of that along the way if they do get success,
yeah.
right? Then you gain something, and you're trying to figure out how do I not lose it,
yeah.
you know? And so, I mean, just commitment level, I think, is huge as us as fans, like giving them the freedom, like, hey, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to go on a journey with you, son. And if you need to explore some crazy things that don't sound like your first couple albums, like, I'll walk with you through that, you know?
Yeah, I think for me, like I said earlier, like, I have no problem with a band experimenting, but it's when they run, like, so for example, one of my favorite bands, one of my favorite albums is Landmark by Hippocampus.
That's a great name for a band.
Yeah, and it's like this really kind of like fun, kind of has like a lot of the guitars are kind of more like surfer rock tone, but then the drums are a little more upbeat than surfer rock. Surfer rock is kind of generally like kind of laid back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then their next album has like a lot more like synth stuff going on, and it's a very different feel. Here, I'll just show you because that'll be
just, pull it up.
Just be easier. And so I didn't like hate the new album.
Yeah.
But what I will be sad is if like when if like the next album comes out and that whole like kind of feel from the first album is completely gone.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and right. It feels like
you lost who you were.
Yeah. They like in the like.
Is this the first one?
This is the first album. Yeah. It's like one of my favorite ones.
I definitely
ones on
hear
here.
What you were saying, like the surf rock thing you were saying. I definitely hear that.
So this is the first album. I just love like the electric guitar is so like in the forefront, and it's just like
very clean,
very summery, like fun.
It's a little folky too.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's a Telecaster.
Hmm. Right.
That's probably a Strat, though. I mean, that's kind of...
That's the first album still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's got, like, that punk feel. Like, that the drums are kind of, like, in your face a little bit, and, like...
Yeah.
But it's really fun.
But yeah,
it's not super angsty per se.
Yeah. And then this is like the new one. So it's not like bad.
No.
But it's still just really, so different.
Yeah, it is really unique. Still.
Yeah, I love this song.
And it's still got that clean guitar. It's just kind of more background.
Yeah. So
definitely
and that like
more electronic.
Electronic percussion kind of takes the foreground. And I don't think it's bad.
Even the way they produce the vocal is very much more an electronic perspective on vocal production.
Yeah. And so, and I don't think it's bad, but it like, and I think it was a cool experiment. But I would be so sad to like if they never put out another album that was like Landmark, where it was that like same like summery, fun electric guitar.
Right.
Because I don't know. I have great memories with that album of like driving in the car with my wife and just like having a good time, like goofing around and like dancing to the songs and stuff.
I definitely like you said, if you try something new and it's cool, but it's not, you know, gonna work. Like don't lose every element of what originally made you great.
But like even like with Linkin Park, like they went back and revisited different things, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think, like, it's like a band for, like, the Killers, who I don't really feel like have gone back and revisited that Hot Fuss sound, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's kind of interesting. So you have, like, Linkin Park, that's a very, like, established band that have obviously, like, gone back and visited these different ideas and creative thought processes in different ways, different avenues. And then you have like a band like the Killers that like are really far in their career and still have yet to go back to kind of that first original sound and see what more can we pull out of this sound or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you have a band like Hippocampus that is like a really new band. Like Landmark came out in 2017 and then this last album came out like beginning of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting looking at like these different bands and their different scopes of their careers, and then being able to be like, man, I wonder what's gonna happen. Like, are they gonna go like would Hippocampus go back to their original sound and see what more ideas and creativity they can flesh out of that idea, or are they gonna completely like not go from the second album or the first album and can go with something completely different even on top of that?
I do agree. I like it when bands kind of return to like a unique space or unique vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think doing it artificially only devalues the original thing.
Right.
And so that would be my only caveat is like when you return to it, it needs to feel genuine.
And right. I think that, it all comes down to like motivation. You know, motivation translates in the product. So if you're like, oh, we're going to go back because that's what made us money, it's going to feel cheap when they do it again.
Right.
But if you're like, no, let's go back to our roots. We want to reconnect with our beginnings,
you
know, like travel the old neighborhood and be like, I used to live in that house, you know, tell the stories, like then it comes across as, you know, authentic and because it is authentic.
Yeah. And like for me too, like it's hard to like, so like the first people's first albums, I always feel like that's what everybody says is their authentic sound.
Right.
You know, because that's what they like first heard, you know? And it's easy to look at bands like The Killers and Linkin Park and even like Arcade Fire or whatever, and listen to their first album and be like, this is their true authentic sound. But that's so weird, because then it's like I know, like, if I was an artist or whatever, and then like say I always wanted to record with this $3,000 synthesizer, you know, and I love the way it sounds, love the way it like it is, and I feel like I want to create and mess around with it or whatever, and I put an album using that, and then people are like, oh, this doesn't sound like the, you know, $200 synth software you recorded on earlier. And it's like, no, but like, this is what I really wanted it to sound like, and I was trying my best to sound, make it sound like this. So sometimes funny. I'm like, man, people, I mean, like, yeah, money can change the way that they sound, but is it actually like, is it more the way that they actually want it to sound?
Right. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, it's what I fell in love with.
Right.
You know, I first heard it, it's what I loved, and so then you selfishly are like, that's their genuine sound.
Yeah.
That's what, or like, I fell in love with.
I don't
know
if you guys are familiar with the band The Shins at all.
Yeah.
They're like, that's one that I feel like people bash on all the time about how, like, Shoots Too Narrow and Inverted World were like these like really indie folk albums, and then the other ones are garbage because they use like synth sounds, and the electric guitar is more prevalent than the acoustic and all this different stuff. And I'm like, but is it just because like that's like what they actually wanted to sound like in the beginning, and they just like
couldn't afford an amp or something?
Couldn't afford to like record the certain way that they wanted to, or I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting. Again, it's like taking a step back and letting things, you know, evolve, or at least getting like a timeline, you know, and being like, you know, I'm going to make a decision after a while on, you know, or just watch it like a yearbook unfolding.
Yeah. So before we close up, do you guys have any recommendations, stuff you've been into recently that you want
to? If you haven't listened to Hippocampus Landmark, listen to that. It's a great album.
I'll do that.
It's one of my faves. I think it was my number one most played album last year.
Interesting.
I listened to it a lot. Yeah, and then if you haven't listened to the bands that we've been talking about, check them out. They're all great.
All the above.
The Shins. I mean, I'm guilty of being one of those people that were like, The Shins' first two albums are phenomenal and everything else is garbage. And then I listened to some of it. I'm like, this is really not that bad. Like,
yeah, I've also had that experience where I was put off by a new album. And then when I returned to it like a year or two later.
Yeah.
It grows. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I
think it's because you have those expectations.
Exactly,
And then those expectations are gone. Kind of when you revisit, you're like, I should just try it again or whatever. And then...
And it becomes easier, too. So as you get older, it becomes, in my experience anyway, it becomes easier to have that mentality of, I'm just going to accept whatever this is and let it do its thing without trying to preconceive what it should be.
Right. That's good. Which is what we should do. Like, we should grant all people the freedom to become.
I agree.
Yeah.
What's your rec, man? What you got?
Bryce Fox. There's this song, Horns, that I've just been playing a lot. It's I'll just give you guys a little.
Give us a little demo.
A little sneaky.
Were you showing me this, huh? This guy?
No, I was showing you some things like it, but I didn't show you this one. Check it out. It gets better too. Anyway, check it out.
Yeah.
I stopped it right before the chorus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been digging it. Couldn't remember the guy's name. I wanted to drop it last week, but Bryce Fox.
Oh yeah, I remember. My rec is Slow Dancing in the Dark by Joji, the YouTube legend,
dude.
The absolute mad lad, Joji.
Filthy Frank.
Formerly known as Filthy Frank. Pink guy. He's done a lot of stuff as Pink guy.
I think I showed you his stuff.
I can't recommend lo-fi
hip hop stuff.
Oh yeah.
I can't recommend Pink Guy.
No.
To anyone. There's no reason to listen to any Pink Guy. But his Joji stuff. I love his Joji stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything as Joji, but particularly Slow Dancing in the Dark. It's a great song.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So Sound Mind, you find us on all the podcast platforms. We're at Skytree Studios. You can find us on Facebook and all the other socials. And yeah, so just a quick shout out too of the heart behind the studio is actually to create a platform for people to kind of grow in their sound. You know, maybe they don't know where to start. Maybe they're halfway through their journey. Who knows? But that's kind of the whole heart behind the studio is for people to have a place where they can grow, get, you know, capture their sound and get out there. So. Peace out. Don't do the finger thing, Justin. Oh, I was going to say
it. Too late, man.
Finger thing.
You have to embrace it.
I do.
Keep it real, folks.